Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Health Star Worldwide Radio Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Ouch, yes, it is a nasty thing. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Harriet Tramer, author, journalist, caregiver. I ran into this beautiful lady and I realized she's kind of famous in her own right. She's written several books. Well, I'll just let her tell about how great she is when we get to her introduction. I want to say that if you're new to this show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially from the Blab Television Network, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial. Wonderful qualities, right? Oh, yeah. Well, that makes them very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. They give and they give and they give till there's nothing left to give, and then they burn out. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember they say in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask? Because they know from experience that if you don't, you'll most likely black out and that you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, only one way out of the grief process. Got to go through it. Can't go around it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. Got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. I want to mention that my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, has all these podcasts, which are recorded after they're live, as this one will be. So feel free to go there. And just for going there, we'll give you a free gift, a copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, just for taking a short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. Isn't that a good deal? I think so. All right, enough of that. Welcome to my guest, Harriet, and welcome to Adrian, my co-host.
Hi.
Of Caregiver Space. Harriet, how are you?
Doing fine.
You look wonderful. Why don't you tell us, for those who don't know who you are, just who is Harriet Tramer and why is she here on this earth?
I don't think I can answer all those questions, but I am the author of a book, Growing Up as She Grows Old, and I would like to say right off to start our dialogue, if you talk about being a caregiver, your main issue, as it basically discussed in this book, although not necessarily in these terms, is who are you a caregiver for? Mm-hmm. Are you a caregiver for your elder? Or are you a caregiver for yourself? That, to me, becomes the major question. And I should say often a very difficult and painful question.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that. I mean, obviously, I always say I'm the caregiver's caregiver and everything. But we really are caregivers to two people, or we should be. Wouldn't you agree, Adrian?
Absolutely.
Have you ever thought of that? We are a caregiver to our loved one, and we must also, first and foremost, be a caregiver to ourselves. Otherwise, we're in trouble.
I was lucky. I got that early.
So what made you a caregiver, Harriet? And is this the only book you've written, or you've written other books?
Oh, I've written other books, but this is the one on that topic. I've written a novel, I've written a textbook, a few different things. What made me a caregiver? No difficult questions there. My mother lived a few days after her 97th birthday. Now, there may be an unusual person out there who can live that long and totally take care of themselves, but I'd not think it's that common.
Wow. So what was her ailment? Just old age?
Probably. Now, I know that's going to sound a little ignorant. She had some memory issues, but we never sought to find out, because why would you? Exactly what the title might be. In other words, whether it was Alzheimer's or, you know, vascular dementia.
Right.
Didn't matter.
Yeah. What year was that? How old were you when you were her caregiver when she was 97?
I was about 56 to 60.
Wow. Now, I was reading your book, and there was something in there that I've never seen before. And Adrian, I'm curious if you've ever heard of this. It's called the Zaret Burden Interview. What is that? And tell us, you know, what will a caregiver get from taking that? Have you ever heard of that, Adrian?
No, I have not.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay. First, I will start with indicating that surveys of this type or any type are kind of hard to interpret, because your problem becomes when you're a caregiver that you may be experiencing burnout and don't even realize it. Now, how can you experience burnout and not even realize it? Well, number one, you may have burnout before you became a caregiver. I can't answer that.
Yeah.
You may have burnout from most anything and everything else. And the burnout you have when you become a caregiver, you may not even recognize as burnout. You may just think that's what it is. I mean, maybe your parent you're caring for was always a pretty difficult person. And maybe you were burnout from dealing with them before they even needed a caregiver. That's one thing. You would have to, for this to mean anything, you would have to find out just who you are dealing with. Did this person have burnout before they took this or not? It's like,
yeah, there's many things that can burn us out, right? Your job can burn you out. Your
life can burn you out. You can burn yourself out.
Sure.
Wow. Yeah, and then to be burned out and then to be a caregiver, so it's like you're going into it with burnout. That doesn't sound good.
You might. Or one other thing is, who's to say you'll be honest? Like, the question is, are you sometimes embarrassed by your loved one? Or do you sometimes feeling they're demanding too much? Well, if you have a couple that has been married for 60 years, are they going to honestly answer that? Or are they going to consider that to be a betrayal?
Well, I would think they would have to take that test without, under anonymity, knowing that their spouse would not see the answers.
You don't. I mean, unless you get that up to the internet and take it yourself, you don't take it under anonymity. You go in to somebody and say, hey, I'm a caregiver, I need help. They give you the test.
Yeah, I was reading the questions. There's like 30 of them or so, and some of them were pretty... You know, I was struggling with them because I was trying to see, okay, where do I fit on this scale? You know, and it just talks about your raw, honest emotions on how you feel about your caregiver and things that you would never articulate or verbalize in public or to even a close friend, because it would make you feel like I'm a terrible person. Fortunately, you know, I have a pretty good relationship with my wife, and she's pretty independent. And, you know, I'm really blessed by God that she can take care of herself most of the time, even though she's paralyzed on her right side. And she has, she can't speak because of a stroke. She lost her ability to speak. Yet she's still very pleasant. And fortunately, you know, I have very few number fours on my test. So I think I've got a good score so far, anyway.
Well, one other thing to consider, I put this in the politest way I know how. If you talk about somebody who has Alzheimer's, people who don't quite understand are just going to think, well, this person forgets. They're themselves. They're the way they always have been. They just forget. But they can get agitated. I'm not saying your wife fits into this category. I don't know. I couldn't say that. But sometimes if somebody has had a stroke, their personality changes. Things happen in their brain. They can become agitated and very difficult to deal with. Now, to someone who doesn't know them, here's this person who's struggling and sitting in a wheelchair. For you who are dealing with that, I mean you personally, for somebody who's dealing with that every day, it's something very different. And yeah, you're going to be very lax to admit that. You're going to be lax to admit it because you're going to think that makes me a horrible person. You're going to be lax to admit it because you're going to say my job is a caregiver and I'm doing a lousy job, or I wouldn't feel that way.
And then the guilt comes in, right?
I'm sure it can. Guilt, feeling of inadequacy, failure. Yeah.
So what's the answer for that? Let's say a person scored terrible on that test. I mean, your book is an amazing treasure trove of very practical suggestions. It sounds like, you know, you may have learned these lessons the hard way, like most of us did. But how did you become such a wise caregiver? And what would you suggest for someone who does poorly on this test? And we'll later explain to people how they can maybe take that test.
Well, I don't know as I became a wise caregiver, but I think the only answer, and it's a very difficult one, is to realize you can only take so much on yourself. If you are getting burnout, you need some time away from the fire, which is dealing with this person who needs caregiving. Now, that sounds wonderful. You can say, all right, send them to a daycare center, have a home health care aide come in, have them take our therapy every day. But guess what? Is that always possible?
Yeah, financially, no. Maybe time-wise, no. Yeah.
How about financially-wise, no?
Right. I mean, any comments, Adrian? Adrian,
no,
I hear you.
I'm listening. I'm looking for the test.
Oh, later on. It's in her book. I don't know. How can we share that test with people? Is there a place that they can only like see the test? Maybe you can email it to me later on.
In the book. I can email you later on where I'd have to go online and find a link.
Okay. Well, yeah, we can just tell people go to Amazon and buy the book. It's in the book.
That's the best bet.
That is the best way to find out. We don't want to just, you know, hand out free copies of your book. They should buy the book and support caregivers.
Now, I mentioned finances. I'd like to discuss that for a bit. A daycare center, that's a wonderful idea. But I think you'd believe me if I said it can cost $100 a day.
Yeah. Yeah. How about senior centers? Perhaps, you know, they can do the 2-3 hours absolutely free. You know, they come and pick you up. It depends on your community and
depends
what your senior
community. Who's to say you have it?
Yeah.
And if your elder needs some special physical care, I cannot answer if they will do that type of thing. If she needs shot, for example, for diabetes, it would depend on the place. I would think you probably have to pay if you're asking for that kind of help. And for sure you have to pay for home health care, right? Now, some states are better about subsidizing that type of thing, but I would count on it.
Yeah. So what have you learned? Have you personally experienced caregiver burnout? And if so, you know, was it early on? Was it later on where you like you need to be scraped off the floor with a spatula? I mean, what was your personal experience with burning out?
No. The closest I came to having caregiver burnout, and I don't want to mention any names, my mother broke her femur, and for a while she was in a facility. Used to call them all home. Now they call them institution or facility. And she received very good care. I mean, she needed two people to lift her to go to the restroom, things of that nature. I certainly could not and would not have done that. But emotionally, she had some memory issues, but she wasn't stupid. She needed to have the mind worked, you know, and it wasn't happening. And that was very difficult. That's when I experienced the most burnout, because I wasn't just going, trying to deal with her. I was trying to deal with an institution. You can't go here. You can't go there. You can't send her to day center. You can't do this. You can't do that. And yeah, I understand they have their rules. I realize that. And I realize that they have a lot of people who need serious help and they're understaffed. I know all of that. But knowing all of that didn't stop me from getting some pretty serious, how shall we say, stress.
Yeah. Adrian, do you see any similarities or differences in your experiences dealing with your mother?
Well, my mother was a long distance caregiving situation, but in terms of my husband and his mother, it's a learn as you go along thing. You know that you're going to be faced with problems at hospitals or at doctor's offices, and you've really got to be fairly flexible but quick to resolve things, to move things along. The problems for me that were the most difficult dealing with were all of the automated voices on the telephone, waiting with insurance companies and state facilities, and that just wore me down. And I knew that there was nothing I could do about it, so I had to let it go. But you, as prepared as you can be, the issues will still get to you.
Yeah. Harriet, how can a caregiver afford respite in the home? Many think it's really unaffordable to the average caregiver. And your book talks about so many different things. I've never read such a practical book on how to do it and where to do it and why to do it. You've really done your research on this. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Respite in the home,
yeah.
What you are talking about is having somebody come in regularly. If you can't afford it, it's very difficult. And I'm sure that a lot of people end up in a facility, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's not up to me to say, when they might be cared for at home with, you know, an aide coming in. The family can't afford it. There's not any government help to make it possible for them to afford it. They're stuck. I mean, what do you do if you have to work, your spouse has to work, you have a 95-year-old father, I'll say, not to always be talking about the mother. He needs to have somebody there. Daycare is $100 a day. You just can't afford any of this. Well, your only alternative may be a facility. I'm being polite. They were called nursing homes or old homes. I'll say a facility. Well, wonderful, but there's just one problem. Why might that be your only option? Take a guess. You can get on Medicaid, possibly get them on Medicaid, and then it's paid for through Medicaid.
Yeah, it's getting easier and easier to get on Medicaid, by the way. Before, you if you owned a house, that automatically disqualified you. Now it doesn't.
No, but now you have to sell the house.
They may take the house. If you have, let's say, your father and mother are living in this house, one of them needs help, okay? The other one can't give them. It would be $100,000 a year, and I'm not exaggerating, for them to stay in the house. Well, the one who needs help can do arrangements. There's all kinds of things. I'm not an elder lawyer. I don't know all the details. But, you know, it's something you can find out. There's all kinds of Medicaid annuities whereby you can keep your money put this person in a home. Believe me, Medicaid is not generous. After the spouse is in the old home dies facility, and then the spouse who's staying in the home, the community spouse passes, guess what Medicaid may do?
What?
Put a lien on the house.
Gina, is this a state-by-state situation where some states it's all federal?
Is federal and state. Medicare is all federal. So these things get twisted state to state. And it would depend on the exact details, but they may put a lien on your house. Now, maybe they have to. These things aren't judgmental. They're just something you should know. Why might they have to? Because all of us baby boomers. I assume, David, you're a baby boomer?
Yes, technically. I'm 62. Does that make me a baby boomer?
Yeah.
Am I the child in the group here? Maybe Blade is. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, technically that's a baby boomer. It's like 46 to 56, around in there.
I just hope when I'm 65, there's still money for me.
That's it. You know, more and more people are needing help. One other thing.
But I do have what do they call it?
Long-term
care. I have a long-term care. I'm still making payments on it, $110 a month. And you know, that's my ace in the hole if I ever need it. Pays $400 a day. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. And two things are happening. First off, there's more and more of us baby boomers who may, as we age, need help. One other thing, there's a push on to keep people at home. Obvious reasons. If you're at home, you have more control over the situation, more privacy, more everything. Somebody doesn't have to move from this ward to this ward because they're now having this problem. They just stay in their home. All right? The advantages, obvious. Hard to afford. People keep them in the home longer, which means, guess what? By the time they go into a facility, they need more help.
Well, listen, Harry, we're going to take a short break. Hold that thought. And when we come back, we'll continue on this. Don't go away.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with our guest Harriet Tramer and our co-host Adrian Gruberg and me, Dave Nassani, on the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Network, and our wonderful engineer Blade, who makes it all happen. Harriet, I wanted to ask you something. When does a caregiver know that it's time to start to consider putting a loved one in a facility because the home environment just isn't working? And, without it costing a tremendous toll on the caregiver, because there's not only the financial cost, there's the emotional, there's the physical, there's the mental cost. This thing can be very, very expensive in four different areas, right?
The answer to that question is very difficult. And I'm not trying to skip around things. The reason is, in this day and age, the term facility has broadened. At one point, it simply meant you're putting somebody in an old home. And excuse me, a lot of times that was what? A holding situation, going to what we know would be coming next. In this day and age, that's a little trickier. Why? Because you not only have a nursing facility, you have what else? Independent living. You have assisted living. You have very assisted living. You have what are called NORCs.
What's that?
NORC is naturally occurring retirement community. Now somebody may move into one of these and they have a lot of social services. Now, if you're talking about facility, again, a very wide range. You may not have to decide that your loved one has to go into a facility. Guess who may decide? They may. And I mean, I'm not being funny, because you also, and I mean, this is all marketing tools. In this day and age, they have continuing care retirement communities where you can go in as independent living, which generally, every place is a little different, but generally what independent living means is you just have an apartment and you may get one meal a day, or you may get help with shopping, or you may get some help with keeping the place clean, but it's basically independent living.
Now, so even a dementia patient can survive in that kind of environment, right? Independent living.
Now we're getting into the real tricky thing. We see Adrienne shaking her head. I'll let Adrienne reply.
I just imagine that if someone is in and out of dementia, it's got to be a very scary thing to leave them with things like cooking utensils and fire and, you know, preparing things on their own.
Well, more of assisted living, I think.
You would want assisted living.
Okay, but let's start at base one. If you're talking about independent living, somebody may decide that they want that, that they're tired of taking care of their home, that they want their home sold, so, you know, their children or niece or nephew or whoever it is who comes after them isn't going to have to take care of it. They may make that decision and generally say, hey, I would like the companionship I have in independent living. I would like all of that. That's where I want to go. Or a couple may decide that, because they may say, hey, we move into one of these continuing care retirement communities. Somebody needs more help. They can just be moved into the section of this retirement community where they get more help. It's less traumatic. We don't have to decide it. They have a stroke. Uh-oh, we got to get them into a place where they can get that care. No, they're living in the retirement community. They can be moved to a place where they get that care. It's very different. Now, again, they may decide, I want to do this, at which point it's not traumatic. Now, where things can get real tricky, this is all real tricky, and getting trickier, why? Because there's just so many options. When you have options, things get trickier. There's no way of getting around it. At one point when there was just a nursing home, and that point went so much so long
ago. I wonder why caregivers are so stressed out. They're navigating through river rapids.
Well, absolutely. The more choices, the more stress. Absolutely.
Now, yeah, I go crazy when I have too many choices on a food menu. My gosh.
Well, all right. Yeah. Again, at one point, somebody just, then it's not happening for them at home. We got to put them in a nursing facility. Not that easy now. But things get very tricky. Now, what happens if somebody moves into some type of assisted living or even independent living and they begin to need more help?
Well, just as a definition of terms, maybe some people don't know the difference. Assisted living is where meals are prepared and somebody's watching over you, and maybe a nurse comes in every day into your little apartment. It's kind of like a hotel room. Independent living is like an apartment. Nobody's looking after you. It's just the community when you go outside into the common area, right?
Well, they're all a little different. Even with independent living, you may have somebody clean your place or things of that nature. It just depends on the every place is different. But let's say somebody moves into independent living or assisted living, they begin to need more help. Well, when they move in, they may sign something or maybe some stipulation that you basically have to be able to take care of yourself. Well, they no longer can, but they can afford to have somebody come in and take care of them. Well, it gets tricky because there have been lawsuits to the effect, no, you cannot do that. If you cannot take care of yourself, you can't be here. And there have been lawsuits regarding that and the idea that what's it to you? I'm paying for this person. If I was just in a private apartment building and I needed a caretaker, guess what? All right, I live in a condominium. If I need a caretaker, what can they say about it? Your condominium, you own the place. Some retirement communities, you own the place, but they can get real tricky if you need more help and you don't want to go into the nursing facility or your family doesn't want you to, and they can afford somebody to come in. I mean, very tricky.
Yeah.
And
you're so wise. I'm amazed at how much wisdom you have. It's like you were caring for more than just one person, like you were doing it all your life.
Well, no. It's just when we baby boomers get together, we sometimes discuss these things. There's much, much written about them. You pick up the New York Times or go online and read it every day. These things are in there.
I think that people don't realize how much they need to research what steps need to be taken when they're retiring to a different community, when they're shutting down their house and moving down to, let's say, Florida, like my parents did. And then they started to realize, well, we may need a community where if one of us gets sick, There's a place on the grounds. There's staff on the grounds to take. Let's say my father, something happened to him. He would have needed to go into rehab. They would have that there. They would have been able to divvy that up. I mean, they looked into all this stuff before they actually moved down and committed to a place to live.
Yeah.
And people don't always do the homework, but they need to.
Oh, yeah. You don't do the homework, you fail the test.
Well, doing the homework is stressful. Failing the test is stressful. It's all stressful. I mean, I don't mean to sound terribly negative. Why don't we say instead of stressful, a challenge, a chance to learn.
So what should we do, Harriet? You know, do we just go into depression and hide under the covers and don't get out of bed?
Probably not. At which point somebody else is going to make all the decisions for you. I mean, if you're a caregiver, I don't know how often this happens. I don't even know of a case of it. And you just slip into a deep depression and you're not taking care of your elder. Well, decent chance that someone will step in and they'll end up in an institution. I mean, it's taken out of your hands.
Yeah. You agree, Stephanie? Stephanie. Adrian, where did Stephanie come
Stephanie
from?
Stephanie is on the live chat.
She's going to join us. She just doesn't. She hasn't done it yet. She has a question for you. We'll wait till she gets here. You agree with that, Adrian?
I was reading the questions.
Adrian, you got to pay attention.
I know. Yeah. Multitasking.
Well, how does a caregiver control that terrible, undeserved guilt that they often feel about, you know, putting their loved one in a facility? What advice can you offer?
Well, not advice I can offer. The marketing of different facilities will take care of that, because they will emphasize how beautiful it is, what a gorgeous place it is, and how happy your loved one will be. Plus, which, as I indicated, with all this marketing, with all these options, who's to say your loved one isn't receptive to going in? It might be his or her decision to go into assisted living or to go into independent living because they have a big house they no longer want to take care of, or they want to go down to Florida. And, hey, I don't know anybody in Florida, but if I go into this gorgeous home, that retirement community, well, yeah. I don't have to know everybody. Everybody's there. That's the marketing of it. Marketing is to answer your questions and make it easy for you. People who have these facilities are often genius marketers.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Well, you know, many times guilt often comes from unrealistic promises being made by caregivers to their loved ones. What should a caregiver promise, and what should a caregiver never promise to their loved ones, you know? Like, the most common promise is, I'll never put you in a facility.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, or they call them nursing homes because that's more, you know.
I would suppose the only honest promise you can make is, I'll do the best I can. And I'm not even quite sure what that is. That's honest. Because how would you know? I mean, if you have a husband and wife, okay, obviously they have a promise at marriage. Now, if you're 85 and your spouse is 85, one of them needs some help with physical matters, how can you always promise that you'll help them? When how do you know when you turn 90 that you aren't going to need a great deal of help yourself? You can't. Or if you are in your 60s, and you have an older parent, how can you promise? How do you know what's going to happen to you if that parent lives another 15 years and you have serious health problems? You can't.
Yep, that's true.
You can just do your best.
So, Adrian, what do you have to say about guilt, Adrian?
It's one of the hardest things to live with, because you can promise up and down, I will never. It's not a fair thing to put on yourself, that you can do anything more than what your best is. I mean, everybody has different financial circumstances. I mean, I know I've taken, I'm what I call a solo senior. I have no children, no one to take care of me. So I have to make provisions for myself for when I get old.
What provisions have you taken?
Depending on what my condition is, I would certainly like to stay in my home, but I am aware of the fact, being realistic, that I might not be able to. Well, that's me. What if I did have a daughter?
Listen, I can't believe how fast this hour is going. We need to take another break, so we will be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout, and if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to CaregiversCaregiver.com. That's CaregiversCaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Harriet Tramer, and I'm hearing an echo. Back with Harriet Tramer and Adrian Gruberg and Blade, Engineer Blade, and me, Dave Nassani. So I'm sorry we interrupted you, Adrian. I guess they didn't hear anything you said because the commercial was running. So let me ask you again.
Yeah.
What's your take on guilt? And because caregivers feel a lot of guilt, don't they? I mean, you did. I did. I'm sure Harriet felt some.
Did I feel guilt? I didn't have any guilt. The only guilt that I experienced was the guilt about wanting to take care of myself before I took care of them, because yeah, I knew what I had to do for myself in order to keep myself going.
Yeah.
And once I presented it to them, they saw that I was doing it in order to be able to continue to take care of them in the manner to which they'd become accustomed.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who neglect themselves out of that kind of guilt. But then there is the guilt about, okay, the time has come and we've got to put mom into a home, a nursing home, a residence, whatever you want to call it. And I agree with Harriet that really the only thing to be in this situation is honest. You can't make a promise like that, because when you're backing yourself into a situation where you're going to have to experience guilt when the time comes, because you can't keep that promise necessarily.
Yeah. You know, I think you should not promise that you'll never put him in a nursing home. You should instead promise something like, I promise I will give you the best care available. And that could mean a nursing home. That could mean it could mean anything. Because you don't know where you're going to be. You don't know how burned out you're going to be. You don't know if you're not physically able to handle, you know, the physical limitations of yourself and what they're going through. But in my book, I talk about deserved guilt and undeserved guilt, you know, and I can say undeserved guilt. I'll liken to, you know, Fred Sanford in Sanford and Son, and how his father would always say, Elizabeth, you know, I'm coming for you, honey. And that little act would get his son to do anything he wanted because he would make him feel guilty. And, you know, Jewish mothers, I understand because I'm not Jewish, are very, very good at this. Middle Eastern mothers, too, actually. Yeah. So my solution is that guilt is a good thing. It's from God. It's a reality check. It's like, stop, you know. What am I doing? Is what I'm doing right or wrong? And you decide. And if you can't decide, then you ask somebody who you trust. Hey, you know, I'm feeling guilty about this. Should I be feeling guilty about this? Is this deserved or undeserved? And get some feedback on that. And if it's deserved, change your behavior, you know. Turn yourself into the police. Apologize, you know. Do whatever you need to do to change and repent, and then throw the guilt away, you know, like a dirty diaper. And if it's undeserved guilt, well, you do the same thing. You check to make sure. And if you decide, I don't deserve this guilt, you do the same thing. You throw it away like a dirty diaper. So whether it's deserved or undeserved, we're not hanging on to the guilt, because like a diaper, it'll just burn that baby's bottom You know what happens when a baby has diaper rash, man, you can't shut them up. So long answer to a simple question. Harriet, one more question, maybe two more questions. How important are support groups to the caregiver or to the Alzheimer's patient? I mean, is it possible for an Alzheimer's patient to need a support group?
It's possible. I think support is important. Whether or not it's necessarily a formal support group, I can't answer you. I think support is important. I think that can deal with a lot of the guilt. The more you have a whole group of people working with you and supporting you, the less it's me and my father against the world. And if something goes wrong, it's all on me. And the more it is, well, we're doing the best we can, and it's we. The we will take away a lot of the guilt, but that's not always easy. That's not always easy.
And the definition of support has changed over the years, hasn't it? It used to mean going into a room with other like-minded people and just, you know, talking about what's bothering you, what's frustrating you, venting. Now online, you can go like this with a button and you're getting support, right?
But it should be for the same things.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of support, Adrian has an amazing platform. Tell them just a shameless plug here, Adrian, how someone can get support on your platform.
Well, the Caregiver Space has forums where you can join a topic or start a topic. But those are written. And then there are chat rooms where we have some led groups for people who have who are caregivers to people with like conditions. One of them is spousal, one of them is an Alzheimer's support group. I'm going to be starting a mother-daughter support group.
A lot of issues there, huh?
Yeah. Lisa Hirsch and I are going to be that
She was
together.
On the show.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. So there you can go and sign up for a chat that fits whatever your specific needs are. But we try to fit people together to get the kind of support from people who understand because they've been there or they're going through the same thing. So you don't feel as though you're going through this alone.
Yeah, good,
that
good.
You're not the only one feeling the guilt, this kind of guilt. You're not the only one whose parents have become abusive in their Alzheimer's or dementia. You know, they're different groups to support you in different ways.
Yeah. Well, time is the enemy today. We're running out of time quickly. We have about 3 minutes to go. And I want to ask this last question to you, Harriet. In your book, you speak about mindfulness and the STOP, S-T-O-P acronym. Just what is that all about?
Mindfulness would mean going about your usual routine, but with calm and paying very close attention to it, which allows you to focus without being stressed. I'd also like to put in a plug that my book is available over Amazon and through Biblio Publishing.
Biblio Publishing. And the name of the book again is Growing Up as She Grows Old. Is that right?
That is exactly it. Which implies.
How did you come up with a title like that? Explain that.
Well, you're maturing and you're learning to take care of yourself as she's growing old and you take care of her. It's the idea of a dual caregiver, learning to care for yourself as you care for somebody else.
Mm. So is this your last book on caregiving or will there be more?
I'm not sure. If I do anything more, it will probably be more on the financial aspects of retirement, what people need to know.
So the STOP acronym, S-T-O-P, what do those letters mean? What's the S mean? E and...
Well,
got to refer to your notes. She has to refer to her notes. I'm the same way. Don't feel bad.
Well, STOP means sense, keep it in your head. T means topic, stay on the topic. O means openness. And P means persuasion, persuading yourself you can do it. I'm not sure that's exactly what I find in the book, but that is at least an effort.
So give us a scenario of how a caregiver is experiencing something and they're going to be mindful. How do you envision that?
How do you envision that?
You know, just a little example of how a caregiver is going to do this mindfulness thing. It sounds very powerful.
Well, it is. And I would suppose it's knowing how not to repeat mistakes. If every day you make a wonderful pancake breakfast with strawberries, nuts, and the whole thing and syrup, and every day your elder takes a few bites and then says, I don't want any more. Pay attention to what's happening. Don't think what you want, think what is happening. And the next day, maybe getting some yogurt or something that's a little easier so you don't wear yourself out and then feel bonked in the face when it doesn't get anywhere. Facing realistic expectations, I would think.
So Harriet, you have a website. How can people get a hold of you? They go to Amazon to buy your book. How do they just want to communicate with you?
htramer.com.
htramer, T-R-A-M-E-R.com.
Right. And you can make a comment and I would respond to comments.
Oh, good. Harriet, how can someone, because you have a radio show yourself, how can someone tune into your radio show?
The show is Aging Without Wrinkles, and the best bet is to go to Artist First, just ArtistFirst.com. On the front page, scroll down. I'm on Wednesday evenings. Click on that, and you will get to my archive page so awesome. You can listen to the show.
Awesome. Thank you. And Adrian, again, if someone wants to contact you, what would they do?
Adrienne, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. Thecaregiverspace.org is the website. Email me there and I'll get back to you.
Well, thank you again to my listening audience and for my guests here for tuning in. And we're here every Tuesday at noon. So don't forget, have a great day, have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on HealthStar Worldwide.